is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viziosi jumped it perfectly.
Hello and welcome along to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth. Paddy and Ruby are on their best behaviour this week after a derby to forget for Frank Hickey. We're joined on the line by trainer Clive Cox, who's got a big weekend ahead at Newmarket's July meeting, and we relive the Power family's finest hour. Get it all straight from the horse's mouth. Welcome along to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth. We'll greet the dynamic duo in a minute, but joining us from the very top of the show, for very obvious reasons, it's a man who has finally lived up to his nom de plume, Frank the Tank Hickey. Frank, English King, what happened?
I wasn't given the best ride, but at the same time, best horse won the race on the day. I think we'll touch it later with the sections, but had he been given a more efficient ride, he should have been probably second in the race. But that's the way it goes. Unfortunately, it's very bullish, and I have to take the flak now.
Paddy, any words of commiserations for our friend Frank, or is it just roll with the punches?
No, none. I mean, I think we're all, as punters, you do come across these people the odd time who love waving those anti-post slips in your face, saying, "Ah, look," and it's always before the race, mind you, for this very reason. So this, I fancy English King for the Derby. He's 5-2. It's not bad. I got him at 20s myself, but you should back him at 5-2 because you're not as good as me. And that kind of attitude. I'm not saying that Frank was like that, even though he was. But
I was actually on at 66-1.
Sorry, 66-1. There, sorry. Case in point, Tom. So, how much do you get much more back from backing a loser at 66? 20s or 5-2? I'm not sure, but that's the whole point. It's pretty annoying. But from Frank's perspective, he has to do it then, because it might go pear-shaped, and much less than 50% chance that he's going to be waving the winnings in your face after anyway. So I've got to say, no sympathy whatsoever for Frank. Great value bet, but, you know, hard luck.
Yeah, you can't buy cars with value, can you?
You can't buy cars with value, Frank. Can't buy anything with value, really.
Ruby, you can't eat value, unfortunately. Value doesn't pay the bills.
But sure, look, I'm painting my face saying that, Tom, a 4-6 winner is a hell of a lot better than the 66-1 shot losing. People just don't seem to realise it. They always want the value instead of the profit. There's a big difference. You cannot live on value. You live on profit.
Sage advice from Ruby Walsh there. No time for Frank to wallow in his misery. Instead, we've got the best therapy going. Time for a bit of, and this week it quite literally is, sectional healing. Sectional. From the Oaks to the Derby, and in fact the race between the two, nicked by William Buick, sectionals were the talk of Epsom. So let's get into the nitty gritty of that remarkable hour last Saturday. Frank, we have a lot to talk about. Where do you want to start?
I suppose we start with the Derby. I think the initial reaction is, and I was one, look, this is an unsatisfactory race, an unsatisfactory result. But when you look at the times...
There wouldn't be pocket talk or anything like that, no?
No, but nothing got into the race. But when you look at the times, the best horse won on the day. Whether he's going to end up the best horse at the end of the year, we'd have to wait and see. But on the day, he was ridden not quite efficiently. His finishing speed percentage was roughly 106%. Now, the par for Epsom is about 111-ish. So He did go a little bit hard and was coming home a bit slowly. The last furlong, he was a bit slow, but he did win the race fair and square. And I think he did get a good ride, maybe with some of the other jockeys, a little bit of sleep. But the places behind it, I think when you dissect the sectionals, the likes of English King, Russian Emperor, Mogul, and to lesser extent Kamiko, were their finish speed percentage was above par. So English King was 114.2, Russian Emperor 114.7. When you look at the sectionals and what should have happened, Serpentine should have won, English King probably should have been second, and Russian Emperor should have been third if they'd got more efficient rides, you know, theoretically speaking.
Ruby, on the just on something Frank said there about the other jockey's been asleep, right? So say if you're riding in the Derby and Serpentine's gone off as miles in front as he was, you're kind of, at the start, you're kind of going, okay, pacemaker, he's going to come back to us at some stage, right? But then at what stage do you get worried? And also the person who goes first to chase down the leader, are they sacrificing themselves for the good of the race? I mean, you don't want to be the chasing either, sure you don't.
I agree with you, Paddy. I mean, the lads behind, they more than likely realised what was happening a lot sooner than most of us at home. But where can you make ground? Where do you make that move? Epsom is an undulating track. So from the time they broke and then they turned a bit to the right and then they swing back to the left, Epsom climbs all the way up then to the 7 furlong pole. So wherever you are, by the time you meet the first running rail on your left-hand side, is basically where you have to stay till you get to the top of the hill at the 7 furlong pole. Now, obviously, Serpentine got up there first, and then Emmett McNamara started to build the tempo up and first. But his body language and the way Emmett McNamara did it was very deceptive to the riders behind. Because he has quite a bit of leg and used his legs, his body language never looked like he was asking Serpentine to go any quicker. He was doing so by squeezing his legs together rather than dropping his arse in the saddle. So if you're behind someone, you can see what they're doing. You can't really see how much of pressure to apply them with their legs, but you can see if they move their arms or drop their rear end to make their horse go faster. So Emmett McNamara snuck away from the top of the hill without ever doing anything too, given too many physical signs as to what he was doing from the horse's back. Therefore, when the lads in front are looking, and it's quite hard to judge distance when you're directly behind the horse in front of you, they never appear to be as far away from you as they are when you watch it on television and watch a side-on shot. You always think you're closer to the horse in front than you actually are. So I think Emmett McNamara just snuck away. And when he snuck away, all of a sudden he was gone before they realised it. And then it's reaction. And like you said, who chases him down? And that brings you to the Oaks. Jamie Heffernan moved through and then a Steinman and chased down the front runners, but towed Love into the race. Who was going to tow English King, Cambico or Mogul into the race? Well, Frankie Dettori or Ryan Moore most certainly weren't going to tow Cambico in. Oisin Murphy was worrying about stamina, so he was going to use pace. He wasn't going to tow the other two in. And it became tactical. But all the while, McNamara was doing the right thing in front.
Before we do come on to talk to about the Oaks, Ruby, what is the kind of feeling like for jockeys when they come in a race like that? Obviously, you look back at the sectionals and maybe the analysis shows that maybe the best horse did indeed win. But on the television and maybe a lot of punters in the crowd, when there is a crowd there, might feel the race was a little bit funnily ran. Do you feel like you've kind of properly fucked up, for want of a better word, when you come in and the head is down a little bit?
You're hoping someone has fucked up more than you. That you're not going to carry the can. So who's made the biggest mistake is what you're hoping. And you're hoping that's not you. So that's probably the move. But jockeys are human. They make mistakes. And they will have realised before anybody else that they've made a mistake. And one that they can't change. But life moves on and worse things will happen.
Frank, the Oaks, a very, very impressive winner.
Yeah, she was very good. She's favourite for the Ark now and deservedly so. She ran her race a lot more efficiently, say, like she was almost 110 finishing speed, so it was almost bang on what you'd expect. The difference being that the pace setters in the Oaks went off almost similar enough as Serpentine did in the Derby. They just couldn't sustain it. They weren't good enough to sustain that pace. He was. But Love powered through. She was just very good. And in times, if you took her time and put it against the Derby, she'd have won the Derby by, I think, about 2 lengths, just to put it in context what she did. Now, it's all theoretical, like, or hypothetical, whatever you want to say. But, yeah, it was a very good performance from her.
Paddy, she looks like a very, very good 3-year-old filly, and all those that arc, the weights are very beneficial for 3-year-old fillies at the end of the season, aren't they?
Yeah, I think she's the obvious one, you know, and especially with Enable getting beaten fair and square. But she was very impressive in the Guineas as well, and to come and do it again, because I mean you'd have a tiny doubt about stamina because she was so good in the Guineas, but then she just put all that to bed and looks like she'd go even further if she wanted to.
Well, we'll leave our sectional healing segment there, because we'll continue to talk about some of the big races that ran last weekend. Paddy, you mentioned Enable there. Ruby, I wanted to get your take on Gaet's performance in the Eclipse. I know John Gosden was trying to kind of play down maybe how bang on Enable might have been for the race, but what did you make of it?
I'd say John Gosden was delighted with Enable, listening to the chat before the race. But Guy had obviously with a run under his belt. He missed a break, which was slightly surprising. And then William Buick didn't force him to the front. He allowed him to get there in his own time, controlled the race at a good pace in front without going flat out, and then had the gears to quicken and sustain it all the way to the line in Sandown. I thought he was a good winner. I thought Japan came forward from Royal Ascot and probably come forward again. And Enable on her first start since last year's arc, you'd have to be delighted with her. But she does look more of a mile and a half filly now than a mile and a quarter filly. But look, as everybody and every horse gets older, they tend to get a fraction slower.
Frank, Gaeth probably just goes into the kind of odds compiler's book as just a very, very good horse now, doesn't he? He's kind of maybe been a little bit underestimated up until this season, but now that Eclipse under his belt, and he's a proper Group 1 horse now, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he was very impressive, because I think about maybe 2 furlongs out, you're thinking, right, Japan and Abel are going to come and get him, and he pulls away, and he showed me something I didn't think he had. Now, we were against him last weekend, so he wasn't a brilliant result, but yeah, I was impressed with him. Japan, he definitely wants a mile and a half. I had a feeling going into it that he was kind of a little bit lucky to win the international last year with Ellercamp getting an impeded run. And Enable, she's run well, but looking at what Love achieved, she'll have a big task in her hands trying to land a third arc.
Paddy, we'll talk about France next. A quick word if you saw any of it. Donegh O'Brien at the age of 21, they're a classic winning trainer, only a couple of weeks after having his first winner, or a couple of months rather, after having his first winner. Fancy Blue won the Prix de Diane. Victor Ledorme rolled over in the French Derby, and Mishriff for John Gosden was a good winner as well. Did you see any of the French racing?
Yeah, I had a look. I didn't watch a lot. I looked back at it, and Ruby tipped up the Donegh O'Brien horse. So well done, Ruby.
Cheers, Paddy.
Didn't back it, of course, because it was one of your tips.
10 to 1 each way, you know.
Good man, well done. And just got up on the line. That's great. Look, it's a great achievement, obviously, for Dunnock, who's obviously learned from the best and all that. But so delighted for him. Seems like a really nice young fella. I don't know him really, but it seems like a really nice young fella. So the dynasty continues, I guess. And then Victor Ledorum, could be one of those where he's inconsistent. Obviously, brilliant, but inconsistent. Like, you have other horses like Batash is similar. You know, there's some horses that are just pure. They have so much ability, but it just, things have to fall right for them on a day, or they get on days and off days. And they're sometimes the most intriguing ones. You know, like there's that kind of fine line between genius and insanity, that kind of stuff. So, and a lot of stallions, particularly colts, they are slightly mad, aren't they? So, it wouldn't be a horse you'd be riding off, but he's also one that you'd never be having your conquerors on, I think. Especially at a short price, you know, no matter what the race. He'll come back and win more Group 1s.
Ruby, it was an outstanding weekend for up-and-coming sire Make Believe, winner of the French Derby in Mishriff, and winner of the Muse Adora with Mark Johnson's filly Rose of Kildare. Any of those performances stand out for you? I know you were pretty sweet on Victor Ledorme in the French Derby.
Yeah, but his chance was gone early. He fell out of stalls. He had to drop back to the very back of the French Derby field, then come round the outside. He was a long way back turning in. Maybe Frank will tell us, but I'd say he ran an unbelievable section from the 2 pole to the 1 pole to get himself from 3 lengths down to upsides in front, and then look to run out of steam. But that's Sean T, whereas Alpine Star broke smart from stall 1 and held the inside rail in front all the way in the Prix de Diane. Victor Ledorme got the absolute opposite happened for him. I thought the Prix de Diane was the best race to watch. 4 fillies going at it hammer and tongs, and that could have went anyway. but I thought Pierre-Charles Boudot was exceptional on the winner.
On to this weekend's big race, and we're delighted to be joined by a man who has forgotten more than most trainers know about preparing sprinters. He's also a timely reminder that Frank Hickey knows a thing or two about tipping winners occasionally, after we all had it away on Golden Horde at Royal Ascot. A very big welcome to Mr. Clive Cox. Clive, how are you?
Morning, all.
Hey, Clive.
Hello, Clive.
Morning, how are you?
We're very, very well. Thank you for joining us. Delighted to see you. How are you keeping, first of all? It's a pretty good time of things for yourself.
The horses are running really well, so it's really, it's very, any trainer will tell you when things are going well, it feels grand. And we had a super Ascot, which was even better. Long may it continue.
It's an easy game when you know what you're at, I suppose. Talk to us about Golden Horde at Ascot. That's a huge winner for you, and that means you've kind of covered all the bases in the sprint division at Royal Ascot. How was that for you? A big Commonwealth winner, big three-year-old sprinter going forward. Obviously a big buzz for you.
It was very special. It meant an awful lot. And this year, being as strange as it is for everybody, going there first time out was a little bit... there was a little bit of tension and you know, wanting to do the best by the horse more than anything, because he was pretty good last year, winning the Richmond and Group 1 place twice in the Mornay and Middle Park. And I was just really thrilled that he did what he did. He didn't have a prep run, because that would have meant carrying a penalty. So going there first time, you know, we were thrilled.
Royal Ascot was a great time of things. Your two-year-old Nando Parado, how's he post Coventry, and what's the plan with him going forward?
That was a very exciting success. Not a shock at all, really, because we did really fancy him, in as much as we had to nominate horses that would get a free passage on the ballot mark to go to Ascot, and he was my number one choice. So he wasn't a surprise. It's a beautiful colt. He didn't handle Newmarket first time out as well as we might have anticipated. And so, you know, he thrived when he came back from there and did the job supremely at Ascot. He clearly didn't mind the slightly easier ground. That was fine, but really did it the hard way, making all the running at Ascot. And I would say he has entries, but we're just, I'd say, another couple of weeks before we decide everything. He is in the Papan, but I think that's probably unlikely.
You say he wasn't a surprise, but his price maybe suggested he might have been to a few other people, but you kept that one under your hat. He did it well in the end at a very big price, so fair play to you. And obviously a big buzz for the owners who kind of stuck with him. It's Ballyphillips, though, isn't it, who
it still is, helped
him. So yeah, it's a great result for them. But well done. But onwards, the wheel keeps turning, as we say, and we're looking ahead to Newmarket at the weekend. Golden Horde is out again in the July Cup, and it's obviously a race you've had decent success in over the years. Harry Angel, Lethal Force. In terms of the July Cup as a race in itself, what kind of horse do you need for that type of a race? It's a unique enough test, I suppose, over the July course at Newmarket. Is there anything that you kind of look for in an individual before you decide the July Cup might be an option?
No, I think, you know, it's that top-class sprinting pattern and if you're good enough to go to Ascot with a bit of a, you know, Lethal Force followed up after winning the Golden, the Diamond Jubilee. And, you know, I think the timing is still the same this year as any other year with regards to that. And it sits perfectly in that pattern and program. It's a really exciting race, and Lethal Force holds a course record in that race. Which was amazing. It was a dream that we had Harry Angel a few years later. Obviously, the three-year-olds have shown a lot of potency because of the weight for age situation. And if they are strong enough for that challenge at that stage, then you know, the £6 is a very healthy number of pounds to be getting. So, you know, it's just a tremendous race, and I'm very proud to have trained two winners of it already, and please God, we've got a great chance this year.
Clive, and you come off the Commonwealth Cup on the Friday of Royal Ascot. It's 22 days to the July Cup. How much do you do with Golden Horde in between? Do you allow him to recover and build him back up, or do you just keep going?
Yeah, we kind of, you know, over the years, I think all of the horses that go to Ascot, we give them a chance to regroup. And I think any group performer, any group race takes its toll. But we were thrilled with the way Golden Horde came back. He only lost 3 kilos, which was amazing, really. You know, he dives into his feed. He's got a very healthy constitution. But we also have a few different routes that we start and introduce with the older horses from middle this time of year, off around the woods and then back around the gallops a different way, and just keep their minds, mental approach to life really in tune. And he's thriving on it. He looks amazing, and he's a really happy horse.
Would only losing 3 kilos in Ascot suggest to you that obviously once you had him pretty right, but there's not much improvement fitness-wise to come?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. But I do think with the sprinters, Ruby, that you've got a mental sharpness that is always a factor. And I think any sprinter, even if they're fresh, probably the older they get, the more in tune with everything. But with a 3-year-old, I think a run is beneficial from a mental point of view rather than a physical sense.
Interesting.
Clive, in this year's renewal, obviously Golden Horde tops the market now. You face up against Hello Umzain, who's the Diamond Jubilee, but you're in receipt of that weight for age, £6 Golden Horde gets. What's your feeling going into the race? Are you relatively confident, or is it still a little bit of an unknown for you?
I think there's the utmost respect for all of these horses. And obviously, to take on the Diamond Jubilee winner is... you know, but it's a healthy £6 in our favour. And, you know, I think even as a 3-year-old, horses are still developing and getting stronger all the time. But this guy's got a lot of strength for a 3-year-old. He's a bull of a horse. And so, you know, it's going to be a big help. I hope the ground keeps drying back a little bit, even though we've produced a good effort on very soft ground in Deauville last year in the Mornay. You know, I think we'd all like as nice a surface as possible for the race, really.
Clive, you're a gentleman. Thanks a million for joining us, and best of luck at the weekend.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
July 2014 wasn't the greatest of months for Andy Coulson. He was sent to prison for his part in the British tabloid press phone hacking scandal, nor was it a good one for country music megastar Garth Brooks, who had his Croke Park concerts vetoed by the GAA. But it was a pretty good one for Mrs. Sabina Power, aka Paddy's mum. The proud owner breeder of Slade Power had already seen her charge win the Greenland and the Diamond Jubilee, and then he cemented his reputation as the best sprinter around by burning up the July course at HQ.
Wide across the course, and Nuso Canarias pressed by Slade Power. Tropics and Hot Streak on the far side. Near side, Cougar Mountain running a mighty race with Undrafted. Slade Power far side with Tropics, Nuso Canarias. Then behind these, Undrafted Gregorian coming home well, but out in front it is Slade Power on the run to the line, and it is Slade Power who prevailed the Derby July Cup. Tropics Gregorian tight for second, head of Undrafted, and a big run by Cougar Mountain in fifth.
Well, how about that for racehorse ownership, Paddy? 3 runs as a 5-year-old, 3 wins, beating the best of the best. And then off to Kildangan to start covering mares and start generating the next generation of sprinting stars. Must have been a great time for you and your family. Kind of, I think Soul Power was on the go at the time as well. Were you worried you'd have to contend with a kind of a very dangerous-looking loser? I think you were talking about Denver Bronco star Wesley Walker was the owner of one of the horses in behind. He must have been a pretty intimidating figure in the parade ring before and after.
Funny enough, he actually wasn't that big. he was a bit of a, I'd heard about it before. We did some social media stuff with him. We did a charity bet between myself and himself. And so we ended up meeting there and had a few glasses of champagne, nearly a couple of bottles of champagne. But he's obviously really fit and wide, but he's not that tall. He wasn't as tall as me. He's only about 5'10 or so. So I'd say I would have had him if he wasn't looking. I hit him over the back of the head or something. But yeah, it was a great race. And the thing about Slade Power was that he won like that group one on soft ground. He won a group one on fast ground. And he was a fantastic horse, an unbelievable horse. It was a special time for our family. You know, like you said, we had Soul Power on the go as well. And it was kind of, you're turning up on Saturdays, not just racing on a Saturday, but you're on the big race of that Saturday. You're on TV, like the whole family's there. Everyone gets brought together and you have the favourite most of the times. It was an unbelievable couple of years, and we had great Ascots, and we had great obviously July Cup was special as well. That's a beautiful course, July Cup, and we were there, and you're kind of hanging out with Aidan O'Brien beforehand and all that kind of stuff. And Soul Power was actually meant to run in that race as well, but Soul Power didn't run because the ground went too soft for him, and they were stable together, and the two of them, they kind of hated each other at home because both knew that there was kind of a bit of a, you know, a pissing contest between the two of them as who was top dog in the stable. And and when Slade came out, they gave a big whinny, and then Soul Power just went bananas and tried to kick down the stable door because he realised he wasn't going to allow the race. So it was just like there's loads of little things like that happened that go into a big race like that. Little kind of memories and anecdotes that you kind of have to take away with you. But yeah, it was really special time. It was great for the family, great for Mum. And that was the last time it wasn't the last time he ran, because we ran in Australia. They went from there to the Darley, part of the deal with Darley was that he'd run in the Darley July Cup and then in the Darley Classic in Melbourne. There's a load of drama because he needed to go into the stalls late, and there was loads of drama with the Australian handicapper and stuff like that. But eventually, anyway, he injured himself coming out of the stalls and didn't run his race, and finished about fifth or sixth, I think, in that Darley class. And that was just the only disappointment.
He finished 11th of 13 in Australia, Paddy.
11th of 13, there you go, whatever.
Yeah. The champagne was flowing at that
time. But he wasn't winning, it didn't matter.
Frank, from a punting perspective, there was a time where you could kind of, sprints would be pretty tricky to unpick at the top level because they all end up beating each other at some stage, but you could kind of hang your hat on Soul Power if you got a fast 5 furlongs and Slade Power nearly everywhere he went, couldn't you?
Yeah, our Soul Power when he got fast ground was just a joy to watch, wasn't he? Like, was it one of the second Nunthorpe, was it? When Richard Hughes was doing a bit of weaving?
Yeah.
Like, that was just...
And he was such an unorthodox sprinter. He came from off the pace. Most sprinters race on it. Like, Soul Power was just so special to watch, coming from, like, last in a 5 furlong race with a 4 long to run. And next minute, this thing had just come like a bullet. He was incredible to watch.
Yeah.
Paddy Power shops are back open, and with them, the return of a massive racing offer. We're giving best odds guaranteed on singles and multiples, all UK and Irish racing, all shops, all day. Limited time only. Terms and conditions apply. Ask in shops for more details. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Well, that's enough at reflecting on July Cups of old, because we've got a big weekend ahead and it's time to get stuck into the tipping section. We are going to start with the big race of the weekend. Frank, we'll start with you. It is, of course, the July Cup. Golden Horde tops the betting. Skeptical, second fav at 100-30. Hello, Yumzen, 9-2. Kadeem, 13-2. Threat, 8-1 and 12-1 and bigger the rest. Golden Horde trading at Frank's favourite price, 11-5.
11-5, yeah. That is my favourite price, Sam. Yeah. I think it'd be very difficult to beat. As I've already heard from Clive, he's won this race twice with Lethal Force and Harry Angel. Harry Angel won was actually placed in the Commonwealth Cup before coming on to win. The Commonwealth Cup has been, since inception, has been a pretty decent guide as well to the July Cup. If you go back, 10 Sovereigns was fourth when favourite in the Commonwealth Cup before winning this race. And if you go back, Moorahar won the Commonwealth Cup and followed up in this race. Kadem, the ground, I think, he's a horse I really like. And I think when he gets fast ground, he's going to win a big race. But I just think the ground's gone against him and it'll probably cost him his chance. But I just think, like, if you take Kamari out of the Commonwealth Cup, like, I think it was nearly 3.5 or 4 lengths back to the third? He's won very easily, and I think there's more in him, and I think he'll take a lot of beating. I really do.
Paddy?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think even just listening to Clive speaking there, I mean, you'd even be more confident, I think, he seems to be really kind of got a twinkle in his eye about him. And I just believe about sprinters that they always get better for a run. And I think Golden Horde, that run, winning so impressively first time out at Ascot, I wouldn't be worried about any sort of bounce factor at all. I think that'll just help bring him on.
Ruby?
Yeah, look, obviously Gordon Hard is the one of the lads who've gone for, but I would be siding with Frank slightly in Kadeem. I just think if there's value outside the top three, I think it could be him.
Very good. 3 o'clock, Newmarket. It is the Superlative Stakes. Seventh Kingdom tops the betting at 130. Hudson River makes the trip for Aidan O'Brien, 15-4, second favourite. Master of the Seas, 4-1 and 7-1, and bigger the rest. Paddy, we'll start with you. Have you got an opinion on the Superlative Stakes?
I do, yeah, I do actually. And I quite like Master of the Seas. Now, it's a bit of a leap of faith, as it will be with a lot of these, because they're all two. But just the way he won, it was only a 4-runner race, I think, at Newmarket. And, you know, what I love about when horses win kind of handy, I love if they've kind of drifted in the betting beforehand. So it suggests that maybe he wasn't 100% right or wasn't that fancied. So he might have been fully fit or something like that. It might have come on a lot for it. So he drifted that day, not hugely, from 11-4 out to 70 or 130 or something, but still wasn't strongly backed in the market, which suggests that there might be a lot more improvement to come. And Charlie Appleby's going pretty well. So I think 5-1 or thereabouts, decent price, Master of the Seas.
Ruby?
I like Hudson River. I thought he did it well in the Curragh last week. He jumped out and made all and kept quick enough to go away and win. A lot of Aidan O'Brien's two-year-olds haven't progressed in their first run. Even some of them have regressed. But that trend has to turn somewhere along the way. I'm going to give Hudson River a chance.
And Francis?
Yeah, I'd be with Ruby here on Hudson River. He was very weak in the betting on debut, suggesting he might have needed it. Ruby's point is fair. Aidan's aren't stepping forward the same way as maybe they would have done in previous years. He's unbelievably well bred. Like, he's a Galileo from Mecca's Angel, who's a top-class sprinter. So, yeah, I think he'll progress, and I think he'll take a bit of beating. Now, there was a whole pile in the time at the Curragh, but I'm banking on him improving for the run. And I think the one I'd be afraid of is Devious Company for Tom Lascom. He's looked good in two wins at Haydock so far.
4:10, the last race at Newmarket on Saturday. It is the Bunbury Cup. Moktikiel is a Royal Ascot winner looking to follow up. He's the 9-2 favourite. Mutamasik, 11-2, second fav, 10-1. Arigato, blown by wind, and Spanish City, 11-1. Godhead and Sir Busker, 12-1, and bigger the rest. Frank, have you unpicked this tricky handicap for us?
Yeah, there's a lot of unexposed ones here at the top, but I'm going to go for an older horse, Kimmy Five for Joseph Tweet. He was unlucky on a season reappearance at Newmarket on Guineas weekend. He got no run whatsoever, was beaten 3 lengths behind Jack's Point, who ran a cracker at Royal Ascot when second. He went to Haydock then over 6 furlongs. They didn't go hard enough in front for him, drop back and trip, and he finished with a rattle to finish second. I think the big field, strong pace, 7 furlongs is his thing. He's run okay here before. Like last year, if you go back, he was beaten a nose by Beat LeBon and Haylock off the mark in 92, which he runs off here. Beat LeBon followed up with Glorious Goodwood and is rated £9 higher now. He's ran well in handicaps at Goodwood and in the Victoria Cup last year. I just think these big field handicaps suit him, and he'll pop up in one of them this year. I'm just hoping it'll be tomorrow.
3:15 on Saturday, it is the Summer Mile at Ascot, and Mo Hatter is 15-8 favourite, looking to make amends after a disappointing run in the Queen Anne. Scardew is next in at 11-2, 13-2, Lord Glitters and Marie's Diamond, 7-1, and bigger the rest. Ruby, we'll start with you. What do you make of the Summer Mile?
Yeah, that Mo Hatter got me, my Ascot, off to a bad start. I listened to Frank and rolled in on him in Ascot. It was the start to the end of mine and Frank's relationship. but I don't think that race really went to suit him. He travelled quite strongly in rear, didn't really get out, actually never got out, finished pretty much on the bridle. And I'm not going to blame Frank Hickey, and I'm most definitely going to give Mo Hatter a second chance.
Paddy?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go for Marie's Diamond, who finished a good bit ahead of Mo Hatter. Now, I know Mo Hatter looked like visually that, you know, didn't get a run and all that kind of stuff. But Marie's Diamond was 40-1 in the Queen Anne that day. But just to go with the Mark Johnson horses, obviously banging form and all that kind of stuff, I think that might be a bit too much of a discrepancy in the prices. Marie's Diamond, I think, looks a bit of value.
Francesco?
Yeah, I'll stick with Mo Hatter. He got no run whatsoever. It was a really slowly run race in the Queen Anne. he was on the rail, covered up. He literally didn't come off the bridle. I think if he'd got any gap at all, he'd have finished third, no problem. He's definitely got a big race in him. I was half hoping he'd skip this and go straight to the Sussex. I was going to back him there. I thought he'd be a price and maybe the easier mile there really suit him. But yeah, I think I'm hoping he'll take a bit of beating. I think there's a bit of promise in him yet. He went through that race at Ascot very well, just he didn't get the brakes.
Frank, before we move on, anything else worth keeping an eye on at the weekend? Have you found any gold anywhere?
Well, one very, I don't know what price it would be, it's not priced up, but the 150 anyway at the 3-year-old mile handicap. Finest Sound was a little bit unlucky to bump into one in the Britannia. It went off 11-4 favour for the race, bumped into Calusi for Owen Burrows, I think, wasn't it? Who was a very impressive winner. Now there was 4 lengths back to the third. He's up £7, but I think he's well capable of that. He handles soft ground. If you go back to Haylock when he won on handicap debut, it was a really fast time and a really fast section. I think there were just 2 really good horses at Ascot, and I'm hoping he'd be able to get off the mark there or win, follow up his Haylock win. Melancholy for the 205. I'm not sure what price should be, but she's a half sister to Marenko and Davidenko. The 2 of them are rated 103, right? She ran on debut at Kempton last year off a mark over 7 furlongs. She beat a horse called Stylized Deek, who's rated 104. In 4 places, Run Wild, who won the Pretty Polly. She's rated 109. She was 3rd quadrilateral at Newbury. She tried to make the running that day. Maybe didn't suit her. She finished 3rd, beating 9 lengths. Look, quadrilateral is a very good horse. She's make her handicap debut here off a mark of 83. She looked absolutely chucked in off that to me, particularly on the Kenton run. You're taking a bit of chance. She hasn't run yet this season, but Jesus, yeah. Like if she's 7-4, 2-1, yeah, she'd be a big price, I would have thought. Looking at that mark, it looks chucked in. And just want to keep an eye on for Sunday, the pre-Jean Pratt. Everyone's raving about Pinatubo, but Kinross is a massive price here. He's been declared. If you go back to the Guineas, he was very unlucky. He was making his move around the same time as Kimiko, but he got a bump from Kimiko, lost all his momentum, kind of wasn't hard pushed from there, finished 7th, I think. He was on my mind for the jersey at Ascot. He sidestepped that. He's gone over to France now. He's a double figure price. Like, I reckon if he got a clear run, he wouldn't have beaten Matt Farr at all by Pinatubo and the Guineas. And the price discrepancy, Pinatubo's 5-6 and Kinross is double figures. So,
Ruby, I know you're keeping the faith with Pinatubo. You think he can make a comeback. Do you fancy him in France?
I do. I think dropping down a trip would really suit him. He looked the fastest horse in the St. James's Palace. He just wasn't the strongest there. And I think he'd be hard to beat. But I take what Frank says on board. And I thought in the Mel 6, actually, tomorrow, Tom, in Leopardstown, I thought Colin Keane riding for Roger Varian on Zabil Prince. He's a former Group 1 winner. He won over this trip in France last year when he won the Pre-Dispan. Hasn't ran since the disappointing run in the Sussex Stakes last July, but he's a Group 1 performer. I know he's taken on Improvers and Patrick Sarsfields and Ancient Spirits, but I doubt either of them are Group 1 horses, and Zabil Prince is.
Before we get our best of the weekend, Ruby, you're on duty for RTE this evening as we record, Friday, and in the 5-6... Super Sunday appears at Kilbeggan. That's a big touch for them, isn't it?
It is. Wouldn't be the first Red One horse to run there. I think none other than Tiger Roll has been to Kilbeggan, Early Beach. I think Go Native has also ventured to Kilbeggan in the past. Yeah, but Super Sunday, funny, he's a poor enough record first time out, Tom, in a season. It's his first run since the springtime. Would you face into him? I'm not certain I'd face into him around Kilbeggan. Kilbeggan is sharp and fast. Super Sunday is a galloper that likes to get going. Maybe he'll just be way, way too good, but wouldn't just be for me.
Time for best bets of the weekend. Paddy Power, we'll start with you.
Keep it simple. Golden Horde in the July Cup.
Straightforward for Paddy Power. Ruby Walsh.
I think Zabil Prince in the Mel Stakes.
Zabil Prince at Leopardstown for Ruby and Frank.
Melancholy in Ascot, 205 Ascot.
Melancholy at Ascot, Zabil Prince at Leopardstown, and Golden Horde at Newmarket is the From the Horse's Mouth treble this week. Frank, you'll stick that up on the website for us?
I will.
Lovely stuff.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power. Pa.
Before we finish, time for a few quick questions. We'll start with Phil Campbell, who's tweeted in saying, I'd like to ask the panel, in the assumption that Love is sent to the Ark, which would you consider to be the most likely route to go down, bearing in mind that this is a very unusual and truncated season? Frank, where do you see her running next en route?
I have no idea. Potentially he's liked using the Irish Champion Stakes, hasn't he, from time to time? So she could either go Yorkshire Oaks against Enable or maybe the Irish Champion Stakes onto the Ark. I'm guessing, I don't know.
Ruby, would you see that as a likely route?
Wouldn't fall off my chair, Tom, if she turned up in the Curra in the Irish Oaks and then the Champion Stakes and then the Ark.
Paddy, not the parents sprint race at your kid's school. No, she won't show up there, surely.
I don't think she'll show up there. No, she'll have no chance. Jane's looking fit. She's got that one in the bag. I would suggest that she looks very special. So they may just try and make her record very special by doing as much as possible and finishing off with a lovely Ark win.
Very good.
So going for any group ones, just to make it special. Like.
Final question, Nicholas Webster asks, can Serpentine go on and achieve more first-class wins, or was it a one-hit wonder? Frank?
I've already said it wasn't a fluke, but I'm still on the fence of whether I think, like, if he was running tomorrow, would I back him in the same race at a shortish price? No. I'm going to say no more group ones for Serpentine.
Paddy?
I think he's much better than his... Like, he's obviously proven he's much better than his price suggests he was going to be. I mean, he could have been anything after his previous easy win. So I think he might just be very good. So I'd be saying, yeah, more group ones to come.
Ruby?
My in-depth knowledge of the English or the flat pattern program has me stumped here, Tom. And I'm trying to think of what he could win. Can I see him winning the Ark? No. I think Santiago will win the Ledger. And I'm trying to think where he goes. Does he go to the King George? Will he beat Enable? Don't know. The Judmont, couldn't see him beating Lord North. I can see him winning another Group 1, but it could be next year's Coronation Cup.
That's all we've got time for this week. My thanks to our very own Keenan and Kel, Paddy and Ruby. My thanks as well to Frank Hickey and, of course, our special guest Clive Cox. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to check out all the latest odds and offers at paddypower.com. But for now, I've been Tom Nugent, and that has been From the Horse's Mouth.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
Hey, Jane.
How are you?
Great, and yourself?
You want a cup of coffee, Ruby?
You want a coffee?
I fucking love a cappuccino.
Okay. And some chocolate biscuit cake?
A flapjack, if you had it.
Sure, no problem.
Thanks,
2 minutes.
No worries. What do you call that crowd in Dublin? One of them delivery crowds? I ring you, or I deliver you, or Deliveroo.
Deliver you. I love you. Right.